He was the first pick, or he was the last pick, in the 2011 NBA draft by the Sacramento Kings. He was the Mr. Irrelevant of the NBA. Mr. Irrelevant is a title of the last player that's selected in any NFL draft each year. He's called Mr. Irrelevant because usually he's pretty irrelevant. I mean, they have like 6 or 7 rounds of the draft, and usually the last player that's selected in the final selection, he might make the team, but even if he does, he's usually not that important, usually a role player. And Isaiah Thomas of the NBA, drafted by the Sacramento Kings, was Mr. Irrelevant. Thomas starred in the University of Washington. He averaged 17 points and 6 assists, and he was, from a college perspective, he was a superstar. But because he was 5'9", right, he was not very tall, he was overlooked and ignored pretty much for all of his basketball career. And nothing was new when he went to the NBA. But then everything changed last year. Thomas broke through the glass ceiling of the short players in the NBA, and he became a superstar with the Boston Celtics. He was breaking conventional wisdom and really making all the experts look quite foolish. He had found a home. Finally, he had a coach that believed in him. He had a team that he called his own, a franchise that coveted him, and a fan base that came to really love him. He had found a home. But then, over the past summer, actually just a couple weeks ago, a blockbuster trade that sent shockwaves throughout the NBA, Isaiah Thomas, was sent to the Cleveland Cavaliers. And as much as it was a surprise and a shock to everyone, it was really a shock and a disappointment to Thomas. It was something that he confessed, it wounded him very deeply. Because he came to love the Boston Celtics. Just a few days ago, he wrote a piece, a very moving tribute. He basically called it a tribute to the Boston Celtics fans. And he posted it on a website. And I'm just going to read you a portion of some of the things that he said. Because it was pretty real. He was pretty vulnerable. And the emotions were pretty raw. And this is what he wrote in the tribute. Like, even with all this being said, man, it still hurt. It still hurt bad. And I hope people can understand that when I say it hurt, it isn't directed at anyone. I'm not saying I was hurt by anyone or wronged by anyone or betrayed. I'm just saying, man, I'm only human. I may act like a tough guy on the court, and I may seem like I have ice in my veins when I'm competing, but it ain't ice, really. I got blood, and I got a heart like everyone else. And so when I say this hurts, man, just know that it isn't because of anything anyone else did. It's only because of something I did. I fell in love with Boston. A journeyman who had traded 3 times, finally came to the Boston Celtics. And the city came to embrace him and love him for a season that was quite remarkable. And he fell in love with the city, and he believed that he had finally come home. Boston was his team. And the Boston fans were his. Now they weren't. And he was hurt. And it doesn't matter whether you're 6'8 or 5'8. It doesn't matter whether you're a professional athlete who seems to be really tough, or you're, a sensitive poet. It doesn't matter. When you're spurned by the people that you have come to trust and love, it hurts. It hurts pretty bad. And we all know this. Because most, if not all of us, have been hurt. Joseph like Isaiah Thomas, like many of us, was deeply wounded by the people that he came to trust and love. We're not talking about being traded or being fired by a company or even being rejected or spurned by love. Joseph experienced the biggest level of betrayal that you can imagine. He was sold into slavery by his own family, by his older brothers, those he looked up to, those he trusted. They abandoned him. First, they wanted to kill him, but then they decided to turn him over for a profit. And so they sold him off, basically trafficked him into the system of slavery. And they would deceive their father because they were jealous of his position. Out of jealousy and spite, they abducted him and sold him into slavery. And for Joseph, you know, we've been covering this for many weeks now, but, you know, for Joseph, as you can imagine, it was a horrifying experience. It was something that deeply wounded him. And the thing about Joseph's life and his journey is, when you look at his experience, it's not just a one-time experience. I mean, it's not just something that he experienced because his brothers made a mistake, so to speak. This was something that happened to him at every juncture, at every turn in his life. He goes into the Potiphar's house. He wins the favor of a man who is very powerful, at least powerful in that household. And then, once again, he's hurt. He tells him he didn't do it, but it doesn't matter. He believes his lying wife, that somehow he was trying to rape her. And because of that, he's thrown into prison. Once again, his hope comes alive when he sees two people who are, you know, who are like him, who are down and out and hopeless. And he reaches out to them, wanting to minister to them. And he has this one little glimmer of hope. Hey, when you're reinstated and elevated back to the position of power, would you remember me? And then for 2 years, he is forgotten. Joseph was hurt throughout his life. The thing is, when you see somebody who's been wounded, when you see somebody has been kicked around and battered, who's gone through incredible horror and trauma, what you expect to see are scars. What you expect to see is a person who is coping with all of the devastation. I mean, you don't expect to see a well-adjusted, healthy, happy person, right? If somebody has gone 15 rounds with the heavyweight champion, and he's just barely made it through the 15 rounds, it's no surprise if he has a black eye, a broken nose, and he kind of talks funny, at least for the few minutes right after the fight. That's what you would expect. You wouldn't expect to see somebody who's refreshed, who looks fresh. That's not what you would expect. When you see Joseph and you know his story, what you expect to see is a man who's emotionally, physically, and yes, even spiritually bruised and damaged. Someone who's a little jaded. Someone who has a hard time trusting people. Someone who's wounded, and maybe because they're wounded, they're angry. They have a chip on their shoulder. There's something to prove. And you can tell just by the things that they say and how they're always trying to put their resume out there. You can see it. That's what you would expect to see when somebody's been wounded. That's not what we see in Joseph. What we see is a man who's gone 15 rounds, and yet he's fresh. He's full of compassion. He has love. He looks so healthy that the most powerful man in the empire looks at him and says, you know what? You're going to be second in power. You're going to be the prime minister. I'm going to trust everything in your hands. That's who Joseph was. In Genesis chapter 41, what we have is a description of a person who is totally different. He isn't scared, he isn't damaged, he isn't depressed, and he isn't angry. What we see is a person who's filled with integrity, grace, and compassion. Joseph is totally healed. He is totally healed. He's brought before the Pharaoh with the opportunity to give an interpretation of a dream that causes the Pharaoh deep distress. And Joseph not only gives him the interpretation of the dream, he gives him the solution to the crisis that he is about to go through, that he and the whole empire is about to go through. They're about to face imminent disaster. It's better than the weatherman. I mean, he has laid out what exactly it's going to look like. And he also gives to him exactly what he needs to do to prepare for the imminent disaster that is to come. And what Pharaoh does is he looks at Joseph and he says, I mean, it's clear as day to him. It's like, you have all the wisdom, and it's obvious to me, I'm not a man of God, but it's obvious to me that you're a man of God, that somehow God has anointed you with ability, discernment, and wisdom. And it's obvious that you have nothing to prove. So I'm going to make you the prime minister of Egypt, second in command. Pharaoh elevates him because Joseph was healthy. He gives him a priest's daughter for marriage. And Joseph, the text tells us, has two sons. And he names them Manasseh and Ephraim. And what we learn from the naming of these two sons is that the reason that Joseph was in the place that he was, in the state that he was because he comes to acknowledge that God had healed him from all of his deep, scarring wounds. In verse 50, before the year of famine came, two sons are born to Joseph, Aseneth, the daughter of Potiphar, priest of On, before them to him. Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh. Listen to what he says. For he said, God has made me forget all my hardship and all my father's house. The name of the second he called Ephraim, for God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. For Joseph, this nightmare of a life turned into a dream come true. Remember his dream? Not wishful thinking, but the specific dream that God had given him. One that was a vision of glory, of power, where people would come and bow to him, pay homage. And the writer is very intentional about demonstrating to us that this dream was not a pipe dream, it actually came true. Joseph was not living a nightmare. He was living a dream. His dreams came true. And he came to this place because God healed him of his hurts. God turned his nightmare of a life into a dream come true. Because that's what God does. None of us have had to deal with being sold into slavery by our family or friends. I mean, some of us may feel like we have, but none of us have. Some of us have not had to deal with a broken heart, jilted love, or rejection. But I'm willing to bet that every person here has at some point, in some way, been incredibly and unexpectedly hurt, deeply wounded by a relationship, by a series of relationships, by circumstances, something that has happened in your life that you felt like you didn't deserve, that was totally unexpected. Maybe by somebody that you came to really love and trust. Maybe by a process that you came to trust and love. Only turned its back on you, and now you realize you wake up one day and you were on the trading block. The family that you came to embrace, the fan base that you came to love, has turned its back on you. And now you got to find a new home. You have to find a new team. See, I think all of us have gone through experiences in life where we have deep wounds and hurts. Hurt by negligence, whether intentionally or even unintentionally. Hurt because of abuse. Yes, statistics tell us that a lot of people, a good percentage of people, go through abuse. Physical, emotional, maybe even psychological. Hurt because of neglect. Hurt because of rejection. Hurt because nobody believed in us or gave us a chance. Hurt when they decided to go a different direction or chose someone else. All of us, at some point, have gone through hurt. And we know we should probably get over it, but we can't really explain it. And just like Isaiah Thomas, we're being real and raw. We're just like, it just hurts. And maybe it doesn't make sense. Maybe it's something that everyone goes through and I should come to accept it. But man, I'm just telling you, it just hurts. And that's what I feel. But what Genesis chapter 41 is telling us, brothers and sisters, is that no matter what kind of hurt you've ever gone through, no matter what kind of hurt you will ever go through, you have hope. I have hope. We have hope. We have hope because God is the great physician. And just like Joseph, if we trust in him, if we come to believe in him, God will work to bring healing to every part of our lives that's ever been touched by the sickness and the infection of hurt. Whatever scar, whatever wound, God can go there. Even if you think that you've closed the door, locked it up, and put yellow tape that says, do not enter, warning, where you don't even want to go there anymore, God can go there. And he can heal you. There's not a wound that you will ever go through that he cannot make whole. If we trust in him, there was no hurt. Can I hear an amen? And the way, brothers and sisters, the way that God heals us is through his Son, Jesus Christ, in the gospel. God has given us his beloved Son, and his beloved Son has given us the hope of the gospel, good news. It is good news because the gospel is able to heal all wounds. It is able to heal all wounds, and I'm going to give you a couple of reasons why. Jesus, in the gospel, gives us something better than anything that we could ever lose, anything that we have ever lost. The thing about hurt is, what hurts is when somebody comes along and does to you something that makes you lose something, miss something, or destroy something that is of value to you, right? It doesn't necessarily have to be an inanimate object or a possession that you have. It could be, something that you cherish about yourself, like your reputation, your name, your sense of who you are. Somebody comes along and does something to take that away or to make it ruined. And the thing about hurt is, the more we feel like whatever they've done is harder and harder to reverse or to get back or we feel like it is irreversible, the harder it is to get over the hurt. And you think about it. If somebody comes along and insults you and says something, you know, to you that makes you either hurt or angry or feel disrespected or feel neglected or unappreciated or something, and, you know, it hurts. You, and then maybe you respond by getting mad or like, you know, turning away or doing something like that. But then say that person had no idea, just no idea that saying something like that or doing something like that would make you feel like that. And they come along and they say, hey, you know what? Like, I'm so sorry. I didn't realize that this would make you feel this way. And say nobody else knew, and then you feel like it's genuine. Most likely, you know, it might take some time, right? But most likely, you might say, you know what? I'm going to give you a second chance. I feel like, you know what? It was an honest mistake. As they say, no harm, no foul. And so I could get over it, right? Relatively easy. I mean, eventually you'll get over it. But say somebody comes along, says something, does something that doesn't just impact you, but impacts your whole social network, where it ruins your reputation, where now all of a sudden everybody thinks of you in a certain way, in a negative way, in a terrible way. And then they come along and say, oh, you know what, I didn't realize that my doing that, posting that, saying this, doing this would do that to you. I'm sorry. Maybe for some of you it might be easier to say, hey, you know what, there was harm, but no foul. I forgive you. I'll get over the hurt. But most likely, if you're like me, right, if you're like me, because you feel like something that's been done is irreversible, not saying that I can't get over the hurt, but it makes it that much harder to get over the hurt. Does that make sense? I mean, think about all the hurts in your life. Think about the wounds that you feel like has been really hard or you're still trying to get over. Most likely, those are hurts that you feel like still have repercussions. You're still feeling the aftershocks of it in your life. And because of that, it's that much harder to feel like you get over it. And if somebody has taken something from you that it's impossible to recover, you feel like it's impossible to heal. There was a terrible story over the weekend, a story of a man, I think it was in South Carolina, a father who had a loaded gun in the house. A toddler took the gun and accidentally killed himself. And the father was so devastated that he took the gun, apparently the same gun, and then he killed himself. I mean, that's horrifying. I'm not saying that it's right, but you can understand why a person will feel like they will never get over that hurt. Because something that's been done that can never, ever, ever be recovered. How do you get over something like that? The haunting sense of guilt, where you can't forgive yourself, where you can't get over the healing. It's understandable. And that's why we hurt so deeply. Because things happen that change everything. But we have not lost all hope. Because, brothers and sisters, what Jesus has done has given us something better than we could ever lose. He has given us something better than we have ever lost. He has given us himself. The only thing that can compensate over what we lose and help us get over the hurt is if it is replaced by something that totally blows away anything that we have lost. I mean, think about it. If you have a loss and then you turn around and realize that it's led you to a place where it's actually you're the better for it, you have something better, it helps you get over the hurt, right? I'm not saying that you don't hurt ever again, but it helps you get over it. Let's go back to the story of Joseph. We all know what Joseph lost. He lost everything in his life, his family, his father, his position, his dignity, his freedom. He lost everything. It didn't change the fact that he lost it, but what gave him the power to get over it, to heal, was the fact, you know, objectively speaking, he was given something better and greater than what he lost. That's what the text tells us. That God elevated him to a place where he was now given things that he never had before. He was given authority. He was given position. He was even given two sons. Now, it wouldn't replace everything that he's lost, but it gave him something to help him get over the hurt. Brothers and sisters, I want you to understand that in the gospel of Jesus, we have been given something better than we could ever lose. We lose life, we lose opportunity, we lose love. We may even lose a loved one. And that's not to say that God will turn all those things around, because once you've lost all of that, you've lost it. But I want you to think about what we have been given, what you have been given. You, because of Jesus, will be given all of heaven. Through Christ, you won't recover your old life. You will be given his life. You won't recover your reputation, but you will be given his righteousness. You will be given the pleasure and the glory of everything that he's accomplished in his perfect life given to you. I know it's hard sometimes to believe, but there is nothing that you could ever lose in this life. There is nothing that you have ever lost in life that can ever compare to what you will be given because of Jesus. And while it may not feel like it right now, brothers and sisters, there's going to be a day when you will realize that what you have been given so overshadows anything that you've ever lost. You will be made whole. I'm not saying that it's going to happen tomorrow. I'm not saying that because of this message, you should feel like that right now. But I promise you, it will happen in the same way that it happened for Joseph. It will happen to you, because that's who God is. That's who Jesus is. He is the great physician. And what it means is all of your hurts will get healed. You will be made whole. You will no longer be damaged. You will no longer live the rest of your life with a limp. You'll be happy. You'll be healthy. You'll be filled with love. In fact, it's not just something that's better than you've ever lost or you could possibly ever lose. It's something that you can never lose. No one will ever be able to take it away. No one will ever be able to change it, because once it's given to you, it will be given to you for all of eternity. You will never lose it. You can never disqualify yourself from it. It's given to you. The name of Jesus will be yours. The life of Jesus will be yours. The place of Jesus and the house of Jesus is where you will live for all of eternity. And nothing, no one, there will never be a storm. You will never have to worry about a hurricane. It can't reach you. that will be yours. In the gospel of Jesus, that's given to you. But you have to get healed. You have to come to the great physician. Here's what you need to do. Brothers and sisters, you and I, we have to stop pretending that we're not hurt. That's where it begins. We have to stop pretending that we got it all together. See, the natural thing for us to do when you get hurt, I don't know if it's a defense mechanism or if it's just because we like to think that we got it all together, but when we're hurt, we try to make it out like, you know what, I'm good. I mean, you could have a broken nose and, like, limping, and you're just like, no, I'm good. And it just looks silly, right? Tough guy, tough girl, right? And the thing is, like, you can't get healed unless you realize that you're sick. And you know that if you have a loved one who, you know, and most of us do, we have parents who just, you know, they don't like going to doctors. They don't like admitting that they're weak, right? And it's frustrating because in order for you to get better, you have to admit that you're not well. And we're all not well. And it's not just because of the specific hurts that have happened. I mean, sin has bombarded and plagued this world, and every one of us have been affected by it. We are walking wounded. We're all walking wounded. Wounded by sin. Wounded by evil. Wounded by our own self-destructive behaviors. We are all wounded. And the first place to get healed is to understand and acknowledge the fact that, you know what, I'm wounded. I'm hurt. There's something that has affected me, and that's why I act like this. That's why I react like this. This is why I tend to do this. This is why I can't do this. We have to admit that we've been hurt. More importantly, we have to admit that we can't do anything to heal ourselves. Because even those of us who recognize that we're hurt, we tend to think that I can make it better. I can make myself feel better. And how do we do that? We do that by trying to overcompensate. Like, okay, I've gone through this, but you know what? I'm going to do this. I'm going to prove everyone wrong, and I'm going to get over it. I'm going to, you know, if I've been wounded by love, I'm going to dive into my career. And if I have been failing in my career, I'm going to dive into whatever it is that you use to medicate and to cover all the pain. That's what we do. And we like to think that if I do enough of this, I can get myself to a place where I can feel better. Brothers and sisters, we have to stop trying to heal ourselves. Remember this, home remedies do not work. Right? Home remedies do not work. I don't care what they said on the internet. Right? I don't care what Wikipedia said. I don't care how much vinegar or soda, baking soda you put into it and what kind of concoctions and how much you boil it and how much you drink and how much you put it over. The fact of the matter is there are some sicknesses in life. There are some diseases that home remedies do not work. You have to get real help in order to get healed. And the real help is outside of your purview. It's out of all of our purview. It's something only God can do. Make no mistake, the reason why Joseph was healed was not because he came to a position of power. That's not why he was healed. Because you and I know that when you have a hurt, it doesn't matter what kind of success you have, it doesn't fill the empty void that you have because of whatever hurt that's been there. It doesn't. I don't care how much money you have, how much success, or what they say about you. The reason that Joseph was healed was because God healed him, and that's what Joseph recognized. It was not because he proved everyone wrong. It was because God went into a place that he thought no one could ever go. And he healed him. He healed him of his power. Healed him of his hurt. Folks, the gospel is not only the best way to get over a broken heart. It is ultimately the only way to truly get over, to be truly made whole from all your hurts. No scar. That's what the gospel promises. No scar. Now here's the thing. I want to be very clear, and it's really important for us to understand this. Just because I said this and just because you believe it doesn't mean that, again, like I said, all of a sudden you're going to be made whole. Or you should expect yourself to be feeling like you're whole. Because healing doesn't happen like that. It doesn't happen just because you know you shouldn't hurt or you have something better. It's not a logic thing where you know, okay, Jesus gives me something better, so it makes me feel better. It doesn't happen that way, right? And I don't want you to walk away thinking that way, because that just brings an added load of guilt. Like, okay, I know this. I know I should feel better. I know I should feel happier, but I just don't. I still hurt. I want us to understand that healing comes in God's time. It came in God's time for Joseph, and it will come in God's time for you. So I don't want you to feel guilty over that. I want you to confess your hurts. I want you to turn to the great physician that is Jesus. I want you to believe in everything that he's promised for you. And when you're still reeling and hurting and struggling and crying, this is the last thing I want you to remember. I want you to remember that in Jesus, we have not only been given something better than we lost, we've not only been given something that we cannot lose, but in Jesus, he has given us someone who knows what it means to lose. One who's lost more than you've ever lost. Isaiah, not Isaiah Thomas, but the Isaiah, in the book of Isaiah, Isaiah chapter 53. Listen to what this tribute says about Jesus. He was despised and rejected by men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. And as one from whom men hide their faces, he was despised and we esteemed him not. Surely he has borne our griefs and carried our sorrows, yet we esteemed him stricken, smitten by God, and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. Upon him was the chastisement that brought us peace. And with his wounds, we are healed. You know, I said that Jesus will heal us of all wounds so that there is no scarring. And that's true. But you know, when we get to heaven and when we see Jesus, and we will see Jesus, we will have no scars, but he will still have his. To remind us, by his wounds, we have been healed. And if you're still hurting, I want to remind you who you will always have. Jesus, who has been wounded. And because he has been wounded, he doesn't look to you and say, get over it. Move on with your life. He sits there with you. Because he knows healing doesn't just happen. He has great bedside manners. He sits there with you until you heal. Amen. Let's pray.